F1A. Number 16A.
We did Habakkuk, but we didn't quite finish The Last Stone. But let's recall the whole story, which is quite an interesting story, how Habakkuk himself calls himself a prophet. He knows in the depths of his heart that God is true and that God will keep his promise, but he has a difficulty in wedding and atoning, so to say, what he sees with his physical senses, with that what really reality is and what that unseen God really is. So he has that difficulty between the physical sense testimony and the spiritual sense testimony, and he resolves it through his prophecy. And we have seen that he is raising three great questions, which everybody today raises also. In one sense, one feels deep in one's heart that there is a God, but one cannot reconcile that fact with what the testimony of the physical senses say to us. Namely, those first three great subjects of mind, spirit, and soul. Of mind, where Habakkuk says, well, fundamentally I know that God is a law of righteousness, but when I look into the world, I see that there is only unrighteousness going on, that the law is being broken. How can I reconcile that with my theology? In the second subject of spirit, he says, well, if I look out into the world, I see always that evil is more powerful than good. Though I know deep in my heart that God is of too pure an eye that he can behold evil. So how can I reconcile that? And in the third subject, he sees with his eyes that God doesn't care for his people, that he does not intervene when the enemies come and spoil the whole land, that nothing happens, that God does not help his people. So how can he reconcile that with his theology, which says that God is faithful to his people, which was Hosea's prophecy? And so he shows that what is wrong about his attitude is that he looks out from a standpoint that is mortal, namely from the standpoint of his mortal sense, his mortal mind, and therefore says this is not the way we should look at the problem. And so in principle we have the change of standpoint. He goes on the watch, he goes on the top of the tower, he looks out from the tower, and from that point on he sees naturally a new vision. And we should really inscribe that vision into our heart so that we always can see it, so that it is always near, so that everyone who reads those tablets can understand it. Even if he reads it quickly, it should be so pinpointed in our heart that there is no doubt about it. Therefore, he shows, look here, go out from the divine standpoint, look out from the divine standpoint with a spiritual interpretation of the universe and not with a material interpretation of the universe. Then you live by faith. Then you live by your spiritual understanding, and this is the right attitude. And so he goes on to life, to the subject of life, and sees that if we look out from that tower, from the divine standpoint, we will see that error is falling back on itself, that it destroys itself, that error has no life, so that what he has seen with his physical senses is just a temporary phenomena, but that fundamentally every wrong standpoint falls back on itself. So that he can see that from that right standpoint, he can only see the fullness of life. That very important passage that the earth is full of the knowledge of God as the water covers the sea. That's the abundance that he sees. And so he can go to truth and be aware. That's the prayer of Habakkuk when he prays, and when he sees that in his prayer, that therefore with his spiritual sense, he can be aware that God is the only power, that God is the only might, and that whole prayer is full to statements and to affirmations in his consciousness that actually truth is always the victor. Whatever happens, truth is always the victor. That's how far we came, and then we have a last subject on love, and that's on verse 16. When I heard, my belly trembled, my lips quivered at the voice. Rottenness entered into my bones, and I trembled in myself that I might rest in the day of trouble. When he cometh up unto the people, he will invade them with his troops. So here he gives the sense that when he sees in that prayer the power of God, that this is really with fear and trembling that he can see that. With fear and trembling is a positive sense. He is in awe before the majesty of love, before the all-encompassing love of divine love. And he says, this is now interesting. He says, although the fig tree shall not blossom, neither shall fruit be in the vines, the labor of the olive shall fail, and the field shall yield no meat, the flock shall be cut off from the fold, and there shall be no herd in the stalls. Can you see a rather gloomy picture? He says, in spite of what he sees spiritually, it has not yet proved itself through material evidence. Material evidence has not yet given the proof of his spiritual vision. So everything looks really dreary here. 18. Yet, that means in spite of all that, what we have seen in 17, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. That's the tone of love that says, in spite of everything, I can rejoice in the assurance that God will keep his promise. He had said there in principle, he said, though I tarry, wait for it, because it will surely come, it will not tarry. So he has hope and faith. We have seen that Habakkuk means love's embrace, so he knows he can just wait and see that the time will come when the Lord will keep his promise. The Lord God is my strength, and he will make my feet like hinds' feet, and he will make me to walk upon mine high places. To the chief singer and so on, the string instruments, that's not necessary. So I will walk upon mine high places. He sees the promise, but he doesn't see the realization of that promise. And that's interesting for Habakkuk. It is interesting because it appeals to us, to our all everyday life and what we work in science, that it says, well, sometimes you begin to realize what is the truth about the situation. You look out from God and see what God sees and how God looks at it, and you establish in our consciousness really the tone of life, truth and love, that abundance of life, the dominion of truth and the fulfillment of love, but you don't see yet the outward proof. And then we must be the prophet that sticks to that vision in spite of the material evidence. The material evidence does not give proof of, at this moment, of really our spiritual work. And so if we are not the prophet within us, then when we don't have the material proof right away and it tarries, then we give up. But if we are a prophet within us, we stick to the vision and wait, and it will not tarry, it will surely come. Now, that is naturally something that we want to see too, and that's then what Zephaniah, as the next prophet, is going to show us. Zephaniah brings then the fulfillment of that vision. He will then show that also the material evidence against the vision will disappear, and that the spiritual evidence will be materialized, or the spiritual evidence will demonstrate itself on the human plane. So this gives a good indication to something which we should always remember. A single prophet taken by its own is not enough. It is not giving the story. It gives only one aspect of the whole. And if you only take out one aspect of the whole, then it's not complete. Then it does not really fulfill itself. Here we see that very clearly with Habakkuk and then afterwards Zephaniah. That the demonstration of Habakkuk really is in Zephaniah and not in Habakkuk itself. That's something very definite to see here. He says, although the fig tree shall not blossom, or neither shall fruit be in the vines, the labor of the olive shall fail, and the field shall yield no meat, the flock shall be cut off from the fold, and there shall be no herd in the stalls. You can see a very desolate picture of the land. And yet he says, and yet I will rejoice in the Lord. So it is that point in our life work where we not always see right away the fruits of our spiritual understanding. And it seems that we don't see those fruits yet, because we have not gone through Zephaniah and have not really wiped out of our consciousness all that is negative. That we only had a vision of it, but that we have not handled really the counterfeit error. We have only, so to say, exalted our thought, but have not handled error as Zephaniah then does it. So that only then, when all the various aspects of error that still linger in our consciousness are handled in Zephaniah, that then the land will blossom and the fig tree will then have figs and gives a very paradisic, a very nice picture of a paradise-like world. Yes. Well, that would be Habakkuk. Now, we always should see what we said. Can we really read the epitomes? Can we see the parallel of the biblical text with the epitomes? So we take the Minor Prophet book on page 109 and compare quickly if the epitomes give really the the modern rendering of the biblical story. We have on page 109, we have in mind the epitome that I said. The first question there that Habakkuk raised was that from the standpoint of the sense testimony, the divine law seems powerless. Remember how he said that? How he said, therefore the law is lacked and that judgment is not coming forth, that the law does not work, that the law is not kept. So from the standpoint of the sense testimony, the divine law seems powerless. So you have the seeming and the being. Then we had the second subject, where you remember that he complains to the Lord and says, well, I know that you are of purer eye to behold evil, but I only see that evil is more powerful. The Chaldeans just come into the country and they just overthrow everything and they rob us and take away our substance and everything. So I have here as an epitome the question two, which he had in his mind, that from the standpoint of sense testimony, evil seems to be more successful than good. And God seems to tolerate this state of things. Isn't that in a few words what we have read in the Bible? Then we had the third subject where Habakkuk was saying to the Lord, well, you don't care about your people. Though you have had made a covenant with Israel that you will be their God and that you will be faithful to your God and will look after Israel, you don't seem to move a finger when we are in danger and when the enemy comes. So he has that third query or question, that from the standpoint of sense testimony, God does not seem to be concerned about the human situation. Can you see in it the tone of soul? See, in it the tone of soul is that there is no identity between principle and idea, or between God and his people. That there is not an identification. God says, I don't have anything to do with you people. I reign up in the clouds and there is my realm and I don't care what's going on down on earth. And that's naturally the very counterfeit of Saul, where Saul says, Israel is my representative and therefore is one with me and I'm faithful to Israel. Then we had the fourth subject, that important turn in standpoint. So you can see up to that point, the epitomes all had a common denominator, namely the standpoint of sense testimony. When you look at mind and spirit and soul, I always pointed out that from the standpoint of sense testimony, can you see that in the mind, spirit, soul. Now comes the important change to principle, namely taking a divine standpoint of interpretation, and that will answer Habakkuk's questions. So we have at the fore principle interpreting itself, and when principle interprets itself, it gives the right answer. So we have that. Then in life, we have seen that here I have written, scientific interpretation alone furnishes the true and full sense of being. I could have added and said, well, that the scientific interpretation shows that the wrong sense of life is destroying itself, that it falls back on itself and gives us the right sense of life, because most of the text there was actually showing that when we look from principle, we see that sooner or later though it tarries, that sooner or later a false standpoint will always destroy itself. And that's the counterfeit of life, of eternalizing a law. Here it shows that we don't have to be too much concerned. Error will always destroy itself, fall back on itself. Then the sixth subject was the prayer of Habakkuk. And in that prayer, we have that the immortal interpretation of being refutes the belief in the truthfulness of mortal consciousness. We could also have perhaps put something more positive in it and put it and say that in the immortal interpretation in our prayer of being, we affirm really the immortal facts of being. But most of the text was showing that mortal consciousness is not successful, and only here and there there is a rendering in it which says, look here, the Lord is still that big power that rules over all the hills and mountains and the valleys and over the sea and over the rivers. He's still that great power. In your prayer, just acknowledge, affirm, accept the truthfulness of what you have seen spiritually, and therefore see that all what goes against it, all the testimony against it, is not truthful and is only something that is known in the realm of mortal consciousness. It is typical of what we do in prayer. When we pray, we naturally always affirm the nature of God, hidden from the world, but known to God. And so in prayer, we are really a prophet. In prayer, we look away from the material problem, the human problem, and look into the universe of God, into the infinitude of God, and accept and affirm in ourselves and admit in ourselves God's greatness, God as truth. Which brings us then to the last subject of love which we had taken, which says that immortal consciousness embraces God's completeness and rejoices in his perfection, and this, as we have seen, in spite of mortal sense testifying to imperfection. We have seen that the land looks very empty, everything is lacking, there is no perfection when we see it with our eyes, but inwardly we still stay with that prayer and acknowledge the perfection of God that embraces everything. And yet I will rejoice in the Lord, I will joy in the God of my salvation. And this ends the prayer. And we can see so often when we pray and feel now at rest within ourselves and feel a certain kind of joy and peace within ourselves, and we finish our prayer and go along our daily work, things may not have been changed outwardly yet. It may tarry, but it will be sure that it will come and not lie. And that is why we need, with Habakkuk, Zephaniah. Without Zephaniah, Habakkuk isn't really a comforter. Yes. Okay. So we can go on to Zephaniah. And we read together Zephaniah. Zephaniah, we have seen, means, translated into English, Yahweh is darkness. As a translated, that it is he whom Yahweh has hidden. Both indicate the same thing. The one is darkness, the other one is hidden. where something that is hidden is not in the light, it's in the dark, it's not seen. And Zephaniah will show that the truth of God is hidden, unknown to the world, but known to God, and that he will show how step by step he takes these hidden things, these hidden truths, to the light by showing that the darkness must first disappear, that error must be handled. He is big at handling error, at handling all the counterfeits of the seven synonymous terms. We read first the first verse, which is only an introduction, always to show who is Zephaniah. The word of the Lord which came unto Zephaniah, the son of Cushi, the son of Gedaliah, the son of Amariah, the son of Hezekiah, in the days of Josiah, the son of Ammon, king of Judah. Well, whoever those people were, but it's typical for the Bible, they always said first who the prophet really is, so that one knew which Zephaniah. Many may have been called Zephaniah, just as today many are called Alfred or Jim or Bill or I don't know what. So they had to define which Zephaniah they meant and located him usually through the descent from the father and grandfather and great-grandfather, and said in which realm of the king in Israel or Judah he was living. So this is not really of great importance for us.